Welcome to the daily full show podcast of the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
The Power Station.
And now, right across Australia, it's time for Luke Grant, filling in for Ray Hadley.
Good morning. Welcome to the Ray Hadley Morning Show on Tuesday, the second day of June in 2015. So I hear you ask, what the hell are you doing there? Well, if you heard Ray yesterday, you'd know he was sounding... And look, I think the official term is hoarse or somewhat hoarse. And it appears overnight he's gone downhill. So as a result of a couple of texts and calls very early this morning, he's resting up and I'm here to do my best. We'll see how that goes. Great to be with you on 2GB in Sydney, 4BC in Brisbane, 2CC in Canberra and stations across Australia. Weather today, it is cold in many parts of Ray's listening area. Sydney today, mostly sunny, 17 in the city, 16 in the west. Brisbane, sunny, tops of around 18 or 19. And in Canberra today, top of 12 after what I'm told was a severe morning frost. In Ray's absence, the rules are the same. No matter where you are listening, our telephone number is 131873. If you want to get to us via email, that's simple too. Just go to 2gb.com or 4bc.com.au. Click on that feedback icon and voila. Look, plenty to talk about today. Front page of the Telegraph is where we'll start with something that I think might get your attention as it has mine. Prominent Islamic community leader Jamal Reefy. We'll try and talk to Dr. Reefy later on. He has called on halal certifiers, some collecting millions of dollars a year to help fund the de-radicalisation of young Muslims, including the children of notorious terrorist Khalid Sharif. Now, Dr. Reefy said revenue collected by halal certifiers belonged to the Muslim community. The Telegraph report two of the country's largest halal organisations are listed as charities. What? Charities. Allowing them, of course, to access tax benefits. Well, that has prompted me earlier in the morning to go looking at what a charity is in the eyes of the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commission. And here it is. Generally, a not-for-profit is an organisation that does not operate for the profit, personal gain, or other benefit of particular people. For example, its members, the people who run it, their friends or relatives. The definition of a not-for-profit applies both while the organisation is operating and if it winds up. It goes on to say to be registered, your organisation must show the commission that it operates on a not-for-profit basis. For many organisations, this can be done by showing that their governing documents include suitable clauses and they act consistently with those clauses. It can still be not-for-profit if it simply provides a benefit to a member while genuinely carrying out its charitable business or pays a member a reasonable amount for services. It goes on. They can make profit, apparently, and not-for-profit, but it must be used for charitable purposes. Like I said, what? Back to the telly, Dr. Reefy says, I propose that halal certification organisations provide financial assistance not just to the grandchildren of Karen and Peter Nettleton, which are Sharif's kids, but to de-radicalisation schemes for disaffected Muslim youth. He went on, halal certification money should be invested in engaging with those frustrated youth and de-radicalisation programs. After all, he says, this is Muslim community money. Now, they speak to the Halal Australia chief, Dr. Muhammad Khan. He said his group would not condone any kind of terrorist activity. He makes the point, if it's not linked, why does there have to be some kind of contribution or, he says, penalty? He says, I think de-radicalisation is a good thing, but at the same time, it doesn't make sense that the certification body is the one kind of group that funds the program. Now, the Supreme Islamic Council of Halal Meat, which has a partnership with Coles, and the Australian Federation of Islamic Council, the AFIC, they each collect close to, what do you reckon? Try this, $1 million a year from halal operations. $1 million. As listed charities, both are eligible to receive GST concessions, income tax exemptions, and the FBT rebate. Like I said before, what the hell? Asishma apparently received more than $1.5 million last year from certification income and halal audits, adding assets worth more than 1.5 million. A lot of money, isn't it? I think Dr. Reefy makes a fair point, I have to say. Now, that organisation was founded in 1964. They collected a further 5.5 million from management fees, rental income, and other revenue streams. Under Islamic law, halal food and drink must not contain forbidden animals or ingredients. And we have to be fair to say that there are two major kosher organisations as well, and they're also eligible for tax breaks. I'm talking about the Kasherat Authority and Victoria's Kosher Australia. Now, the telly did go to the AFIC and Sishma. They're the Muslim organisations, the halal certification organisations, asking about questions, how they operate and their charity status. But neither organisation responded. And according to the charity's register, their revenue is put towards assisting refugees, the Islamic community and youth, ethnic groups and natural disasters. The kosher organisations list ethnic groups and Jewish community as beneficiaries. Gee, I'm just not convinced that this charitable status is necessarily a good thing. What's your take on this? I'd love to hear from you on 131873. As I said, we'll try and find Dr. Reefy a little later in the morning. And I know that the Assistant Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, has said a Senate inquiry might be needed here to investigate all of this. I reckon that's a good thing, don't you? Now, look, I'm not convinced that the federal government would be returned at the next poll, but I reckon now it's more likely we'd see the return of Tony Abbott as PM rather than the ascension of Look at Moy Bill. In The Australian today, for the first time in almost 14 months, they say, Tony Abbott now enjoys a stronger overall approval rating than Bill Shorten. This is, I think you'd have to agree, a positive response to the government's second budget. Voter satisfaction with the Labor leader's performance has tumbled to 32%, while Prime Minister Abbott improved his lead as better PM, according to the news poll conducted last weekend. The government's primary vote rose 1 point to 41, Labor's steady on 37. And Mr. Shorten, of course, has been over the past week out there promoting his private member's bill to allow same-sex marriage. The Greens, it must be said, under their new leader, Richard Di Natale, have lifted their vote too to about 13%. But based on the preference flows at the last federal election and that strong Green vote, they still reckon in news poll that it'd end up about 52-48 to Labor. But it was 53-47. I reckon the PM and I reckon other people involved in Liberal Party politics federally would be pretty happy with that. Look, I think the point to make is that at one point, and not too long ago, this federal government, the Abbott government, was not far being almost Rudd or Gillard-like in the way it just turned everything into a disaster. And I've said it before and I'll keep saying it, you do write Tony Abbott off at your peril. You know, he mightn't be the flashiest, fastest talker in town, but he just continually defies gravity in turning around the poor expectations of his detractors time and time again, doesn't he? Anyway, we'll see where that goes. Now, you probably heard the news overnight, but in case you didn't, Victoria's first female premier, Joan Koerner, has been remembered as a ferocious fighter who didn't let Labor's factions wear her down. She died yesterday. She had a two-year battle with esophageal cancer. She replaced John Kane, who was the premier before Ms. Koerner. She said, or he says rather, John Kane, the 76-year-old, will be remembered for her determination. You'd have to say, although lots of people make the point that as premier she was not all that flash, but as an advocate for women in politics, she was a powerhouse, I think you'd have to say. Just outstanding, a very strong woman. Now, I have to quickly mention this. Motorists are being urged to avoid one of Sydney's major roads. You would have heard this through the morning listening on 2GB with Alan and our ongoing traffic reports that there was a drama of fire at a gym on Parramatta Road. Up to 70 firefighters have brought the Auburn blaze under control. At one point, the road was closed, and you would have heard just prior to 9 o'clock that the road now is open in both directions. But given the delays and all the activity there, you'd have to think it was a place in Sydney to avoid. What about this bizarre story in the Courier-Mail today? The treasurer in Queensland, a fellow called Curtis Pitt, has been accused of fast-tracking new laws allowing only plumbers to install water meters to aid a key union boss and factional ally. Now, the Courier-Mail says the law due to be debated this week has driven a rift through Queensland Labor, and come amid a heated debate battle for control of the Plumbers Union of Queensland. Now, secreted into these payroll legislation changes, the law will overturn what the former Premier Newman did that gave water utilities a green light to use trained staff to install meters. Mr. Pitt has claimed that licensed plumbers would restore high standards. However, government departments had previously found installers did not present any new risks. One of the points here is, and this is in the words of the Local Government Association of Queensland, that they say the idea that using plumbers will improve public safety is silly, that there was no drama when they were using the appropriate staff. But apparently now in some remote communities, to have a water meter installed or replaced, it'd be a three-day visit and cost about $3,000, including travel, meals and accommodation. What the hell? Ridiculous, isn't it? I don't know what you think about the current crop of politicians, but I think you're excused if you look around and think we are at a really low ebb here. It just seems so many of them are self-serving, have an issue with the truth. I don't know, maybe I've got rose-coloured glasses on politicians of the past, but it just seems right now that we have a pretty ordinary bunch. Now to sport. NRL last night, I was there to see the Sydney Roosters 24 defeat Melbourne 2. I thought the Roosters were really good. The crowd of around 8,500. Look, I do work at the game, at Roosters games as ground announcer, so they don't fudge those crowds. And having been doing it for 14 years, that did look like 8,000 or thereabouts to me. I know some people say, oh, they play with the numbers. It wasn't a big crowd. It was Monday night. It was a TV game. I don't know if you go to Monday night footy necessarily. Is it such a draw card? That last night was, in prospect, a great game, I have to say. It's a Storm and the Roosters. But anyway, the Roosters were very good. I thought Sean Kenny-Dowell exceptional. And Mitchell Pearce continues to have a pretty good season. Jared Waria-Hargreaves great as well. So the latter. At the conclusion of that round, round 12 is Dragons on top, 18 points equal with the Broncos and the Cowboys. Broncos second, Cowboys third on four and against. Then the Storm fourth on 16, the Roosters on 14 points fifth, ahead of the Rabbitohs on 14 points sixth, Warriors on 14 points seventh. Then on in eighth position, four and against again, Panthers sit there ahead of the Bulldogs. And then at the bottom of the table, the Sea Eagles. I cannot believe that is even possible, given that great club. But that's the way things are at the moment. In the judiciary, now Paulie, that Eels forward, who certainly didn't miss Jamie Sauer, did he? He was charged with dangerous contact. 100 points. He takes the early plea. He'll get 75 points and won't miss a game. And James Ryan from the Titans, dangerous contact, head or neck on Greg Inglis. He, again, if he takes the early plea, won't miss a game. The base penalty there, 100 points. French Open tennis. Have you got into this yet? I have to say, no, it's on. I know it's nearly over and some of the great names are playing, but I haven't really rushed to the TV, I have to say, to see what it looks like. Djokovic and Nadal will clash in a French Open quarterfinal blockbuster. This is one of the sport's most eagerly awaited clashes in recent times. World number one and top seed Djokovic eased into the last eight yesterday with a 6-1, 6-2, 6-3 win over Richard Gasquet, defending champion Nadal, seeking a 10th title. That is amazing, isn't it? I think he's won that 9 times, maybe 10. He saw off unseeded American Jack Sock. That is one of the great names in sport, Jack Sock. Simple name and an element of clothing. 6-3, 6-1, 5-7, 6-2. It was Nadal's 70th career win. Earlier, Federer and Murray swept into the quarterfinals with four set wins. So, again, we'll see how things pan out in the French Open, but the big name seemingly still there. Maria Sharapova in the women's side of the draw has been sent packing from the French, the fourth round stage, but top seed Serena Williams survived a scare to seal her quarterfinal place. Sharapova fell in straight sets to Lucy Safarova. And Williams defeated compatriot Sloane Stephens after she lost the first set, 1-6. Amazing. She's just a superstar, isn't she? Sydney FC players say they will be so pumped by the excitement of taking on English Premier League champions Chelsea tonight that they won't feel any tiredness just 4 days after facing fellow Londoners Tottenham. Chelsea could help establish a new record approaching 84,000 fans at Sydney's ANZ Stadium, almost 500 extra seats. have been installed to cope with the demand, bringing the new capacity to over 83,813. Plenty of people heading out there tonight in Sydney, ANZ Stadium, to see Chelsea take on Sydney FC. And this is interesting if you're a fan of golf, and many of us are. Adam Scott has split with his new caddy and is now going back to his old caddy, Steve Williams. Scott says he persuaded Williams to join him for the US Open, British Open, Bridgestone Invitational and the PGA. Scott had been struggling and fired caddy Mike Kerr. Scott says he had to talk Williams out of retirement for the next 3 months. They last worked together at the Tour Championship last year. Williams has been on the bag for 14 majors, 13 of them with Tiger Woods, and the 2013 Masters with Scott. There you go. Plenty happening here. The open line number is 131873. Simple as that, 131873. Wherever you're listening, emails to 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au. Now, before we check all the weather, both in Sydney and Brisbane and the ACT in Victoria, and we get a further check of the traffic, I want to go quickly to James, who's on the M2. G'day, James.
Luke, how are you? I'm driving westbound about 500 metres prior to the Epping Tunnel. A whole lot of wood has fallen off a truck in lane 2 and 3, and it's all strapped together about 30 pieces, half in lane 2, half in lane 3, so it's really dangerous in that 100 kilometre an hour zone. Call the RMS, they're on the way, but at the moment, watch out for that.
Well, James, very kind of you to call, mate. Thank you very much. Most people travelling on that road probably would have Ray's show on. So, James, that's a great call. Thank you. Huge bundle of timber fallen off a truck westbound before the Epping Tunnel. Be very careful there on the M2. He's right 100K zone, so, and you hit that stuff, it goes under your car. It happened to me once on a freeway, and it ripped the back bumper off. You've got to be so careful. Thank you, James. We'll make sure that we alert authorities to that. 131873, it's the Ray Hadley Morning Show with Luke Grant at 22 after 9.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
And on the M2, the crews have removed that wood from the M2, lanes 2 and 3 westbound before the Epping Tunnel. The crews are moving off now. Also, the police are departing the scene. The Sydney Harbour Bridge is smashed. City bound just past the southern pylon has been removed, but delays go back on the freeway up towards Cameray. At West Pennant Hills, the smashed Pennant Hills Road northbound near Castle Hill Road, and delays go right back before the M2. And Kosciuszko National Park and surrounding area, snow and ice on the road. Slow down and take it easy. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Freshly ground cafe quality coffee is just $1 at 7-Eleven. Grab one today to really get your morning going. $1 coffee at 7-Eleven. Good call.
22 after 9, 131873 is the number. Dominic, our operations manager at 2BS, tells me that in Bathurst, traffic lights flashing orange, the corner of the Great Western Highway and Benting Street. I hope I said that right. Dom, you'll let me know if I haven't. Thank you, mate. Weather in Sydney today. Morning fog, frost patches in the west. We know that, mostly sunny. And tops today, 17 in the city, 16 at Penrith and Liverpool, 15 at Terry Hills, 16 Richmond, Parramatta and Campbelltown as well. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 17. Partly cloudy Thursday, 17. 18 partly cloudy Friday. Partly cloudy even on Saturday, but up to 20 degrees. Brisbane today, good morning, listening through 4BC, a sunny day, light winds, 19 the top in the city, 18 at the airport, 19 at Ipswich, 18 at Redcliffe, 19 on the Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, 19 today. Tomorrow in Brisbane, mostly sunny and 20, mostly sunny, that's it, 20, 8 to 21 on Thursday, a sunny day coming up, Friday a top of 20, again mostly sunny for Brisbane. Around New South Wales today, Port Macquarie, mostly sunny, 17, Kempsey, sunny, 17, Coffs, sunny, 18, Wagga Wagga, partly cloudy, 12, Griffith, partly cloudy, 13. Goulburn, sunny, 11 degrees. Enjoy. Cooma, partly cloudy, 9. Jindabyne, partly cloudy, 7. Orange, sunny, 8. Bathurst, sunny, 11. Lithgow, severe morning frost, sunny day, 9. Barrel, sunny, 11. Canberra, sunny day today, 12 degrees. And Victoria, Mildura, 14 the top, partly cloudy day. And across Queensland, Cunnamulla, a sunny day, 15. Maryborough 20, Hervey Bay 20, Townsville 26, possible shower. Charters Towers partly cloudy 27. Toowoomba sunny day 15, Kingaroy sunny 18. Charleville 16 today, sunny day. Gee, that seems remarkably cold for Charleville, 16 today, but there you are. Mount Isa sunny 26, Longreach 23, sunny today, Emerald 23 and sunny as well. Roma sunny 16. Dalby sunny and 17 today. St George 15. Gundawindi sunny and 16 degrees. 131-873 is the open line number. The Ray Hadley Morning Show with Luke Grant. If you've tuned in late, Ray, unwell today, hopefully back with you tomorrow. Great to be with you. For Ray, who's unwell today, hopefully back on air tomorrow. 131-873 is our number, 2GB.com. Click on the feedback icon if you'd like to join us. It is Radio Ratings Day today, and I think in a few minutes I can tell you about the success or otherwise. Well, there's no otherwise with this show. And one or two others, we'll get to that in a moment or two. I'm just conscious of the time. I think 9:30 and the word embargo are important for me to keep in mind at this point. I'm sure the regular host wouldn't, but I think I should. We've just got a note through from police, and I'll get to that in just a moment or two. Tony Abbott is extending his lead over Bill Shorten as preferred Prime Minister, according to the latest news poll figures. Tony Abbott's rating, as I mentioned, has remained stable at an eight-month high of 41%, but Bill Shorten has now fallen 3 points to 37. The figures in today's Australian also show Labor's two-party preferred lead is narrowing. 2 weeks ago, it was 53-47. Now the coalition behind 52-48. Voter satisfaction with Bill Shorten's performance, it's fallen to just over 32%. Dennis Shanahan has written an interesting piece in today's Australian suggesting that both leaders may have gone off early on issues they would normally dominate. Fascinating. He writes that the PM is copping flak from his colleagues over the proposed changes to citizenship as part of a national security crackdown, while Bill Shorten has been accused of politicising the gay marriage issue. Dennis Shanahan, political editor of The Australian, is on the line. Good to talk to you, Dennis.
Good morning, Luke.
Do you reckon the PM's pretty happy? He would be, wouldn't he, with those numbers today?
Look, I think that the Liberal Party is feeling a lot more comfortable than it was. And the thing about the news poll figures of today is that it shows a trend over several months. What has happened is support for Tony Abbott or voter satisfaction with Tony Abbott has gone up 10 points. The primary vote has improved. And while the Labor Party still is in front on the two-party preferred basis, the satisfaction with Bill Shorten as leader of the opposition has drifted away, and Tony Abbott is back with the ascendancy as Prime Minister. And this has occurred over a series of months, so it's not just a sudden one-off change. This is a real trend.
There was another poll out in the last day or so, and the indication was there that perhaps the so-called bounce from the budget wasn't that significant. This news poll suggests other than that, or are we to assume that we're at that point in the political cycle where the polls will just bounce around? 52-48 sounds about right, and from time to time there'll be a shift which will be inexplicable, but just part of the process?
Yeah, look, I think that's right, Luke. It's getting to the stage now where, we're halfway through the cycle. People are, speculating about an early election, and certainly there has to be an election next year. So polls tend to tighten at this stage, and I think that one of the interesting things about the latest news poll and the other polls, they're indicating that the damage that was done during last year's budget has now been repaired for the coalition. So what we're back to now is a situation where Labor and the coalition are competitive. It is a contest. It's no longer a situation where, the government would have been defeated easily if an election were held now. So we're back into a tight contest.
What do you make of Di Natale's performance as Greens leader? Because, again, Dennis, those numbers seem pretty encouraging for the Greens. I don't know if they've done a lot lately to grab the national attention, but there certainly appears to be a little tick against the Greens' name in this result.
Yes, look, I think it's a bit like a share price going up when an unpopular executive is moved or a chairman goes. with Christine Milne's departure, this is a very small move, and but it does take the Greens to 13% on primary vote. Now, this is the highest it has been for quite some time, and with Senator Di Natale coming over as leader, there's been a bit more publicity for him. He's been able to talk about the Greens' consistency on the same-sex marriage issue, so that would sort of appeal to the Green supporters. And so I think there's a little bit of a fresh face has helped the Greens. There's no doubt about that.
And isn't there, I get the feeling, having heard Dean Attali speak a few times now, that whereas I always held the view that Christine Milne would just tell Tony Abbott to go take a hike, I just sense that Dean Attali might be more inclined to at least have a conversation with Abbott. He might even do a deal with Abbott. Is that a fair reflection on where things are now with that change of leadership?
It certainly, there seems to be more prospect of it, and he is certainly talking that way. We haven't seen too much evidence of it yet, but once we get into the next 2 weeks sitting of the Senate, at the moment the Senate's not sitting, it's in estimates committees, but when we have the final 2 weeks of the winter session, we may be able to then see if the Greens are prepared to do a bit of a deal with the government on various issues, particularly on the question of fuel excise. It does look like they are prepared to talk to the government about fuel excise, which the Labor Party is opposing the changes and the savings there. So it may well be that that could be the issue that would be the change, you know, the game changer for the Greens.
Yeah. And just quickly on Shorten, I don't know. Obviously, given the change of rules following the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd catastrophe, that the leader's going to be there until the next election, it would seem. So they're stuck with Shorten, whatever happens. But what are they? What do they actually do if he turns out to be, well, he probably won't be a train wreck, but if it looks that he's unable to make a dent in Abbott, given another 4 or 5 months of positive polling, what then do the ALP do? Do they just go to the election, maybe six months or 8 months or 9 months out, knowing that Shorten's a lame duck, I'll call him that. They've got no ability to say, listen, Bill, this isn't working, away you go, unless I guess he pulls a pin.
Well, I think that is true. I mean, there's always the option for the leader to resign. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think there is an appetite within the Labor Party for another leadership change. If you talk to Labor MPs about it, they just sort of put their hands to their forehead and just cannot contemplate another leadership change. So I don't think there's any doubt that Bill Shorten will lead Labor to the next election. But there is an increasing feeling that they want him to change. They want him to change strategy and to try and improve his performance. So it's pretty much like we were for Tony Abbott and the coalition backbench back in the second half of last year. They want Bill Shorten to change. And they're not really contemplating changing leaders.
How cold was it in Canberra this morning?
I went out to get the papers this morning and the grass was crisply snapping under the frost as I walked across.
Justin, well, you're a toughie, mate. Thank you, Dennis.
Okay, thanks, Luke. Bye.
Good to talk. Bye-bye. Dennis Shanahan, political editor of The Australian.
Macquarie National News.
G'day, Natalie.
Good morning, Luke. Islamic schools across Australia will be scrutinised in a federal government crackdown on the way they're run. The World Anti-Doping Agency will appeal the AFL Anti-Doping Tribunal's decision to clear Stephen Dank of 21 doping charges. Most economists expect the Reserve Bank will leave the official interest rate on hold this afternoon, and according to new recommendations out of the UK, office workers should use sit-stand desks to ensure they're on their feet for a minimum of 2 hours a day during working hours. In sports, Sydney FC players say they'll be too excited to feel any tiredness when they take on EPL champions Chelsea tonight, just 4 days after facing Tottenham. Luke, more news and sport in 23 minutes.
Thank you, Nat, very much indeed. Now, just quickly, I have to tell you in Ray's absence, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying that once again, the Ray Hadley Morning Show, number one in Sydney. I think that's for now 10 million years in a row, or it seems like it. Well done to Ray and the team, outstanding performance. And, of course, the Alan Jones Breakfast Show, number one again in Sydney. No surprises there. And just for interested radio observers and listeners, that both Alan and Ray had an increase on 4BC in Brisbane. So, obviously, these things take some time, but it would appear that they're headed in the right direction So we do thank you for your support of the Ray Hadley Morning Show, particularly on 4BC in Brisbane. We really do appreciate that. And again, congrats to Ray and his team. Clearly number one again in mornings. 1-3-1-8-7-3, 22 to 10. 19 to 10, 1-3-1-8-7-3 is the number here. Now, police in New South Wales and Sydney more particularly are appealing for information from the public following a fatal crash in the southwest of Sydney at the weekend. This is about 20 to 12 yesterday. Emergency services attended Elizabeth Drive between Duff and Cecil Roads at Cecil Park after a vehicle was located down an embankment in heavy scrub. The 18-year-old female driver was located deceased in the vehicle. A crime scene was established and examined by officers. Initial investigations indicate the white Hyundai i20 was travelling eastbound on Elizabeth Drive about 4:30 a.m. Sunday when it left the road and crashed into a pole and a tree. Police from Green Valley Local Area Command are investigating the incident. They are appealing for witnesses. If you can help out, please. If you just know, you think you know something, it's worthwhile ringing. Crime Stoppers 1-800-333-000. Obviously, they would really appreciate any assistance you can give. 1-800-333-000. Crime Stoppers there. 131-873 is our open line number, 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon. Questions here from for Dr. Reefy. Yeah, we'll get to him after 10 o'clock. Wendy says, bloody cold, Luke, minus 7 where I live. Well, Wendy, where do you live? There's nothing listed there, so come back to me, let me know. It'd be nice to know where you are. Minus 7 is cold. 131873, Theo says, Luke, legalising same-sex marriage will change the Australian culture significantly, which will filter through the education system, learnings to our children, etc. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have that debate right now. I suspect later in the year that'll be a more full debate when we get government, etc. involved, and we probably have time to focus on things other than budget, etc. But that's an interesting point you make, Theo. I do appreciate your feedback very much indeed. Barry says, g'day, Luke. Halal certification, it's a scam. Most people know that. Let's have an inquiry by the right authorities. Well, I did notice today in the paper, as you say that, Barry, that the Assistant Treasurer is keen to have a look at where all that money flows. So I suspect if there is a Senate inquiry, we'll know much more from that. Thank you for your note. You can do that by, you can contact us by email by going to 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au, 16 to 10. Give us a call now. We want to check the weather because, as you know, and people have been telling us, absolutely freezing in all parts of Australia so far today. It's the second day of winter and certainly feels like it. Sydney shivered through its coldest June morning in 5 years. Temperatures in Sydney plummeted to just 6.1 degrees this morning, but the wind chill made it feel more like zero. Some parts of Brisbane got down to 8.1 overnight. Toowoomba plummeted to 1.4. In the lead-up to the ski season, Thredbo and Perisher have reported 30 centimetres of fresh snow in recent days. There are also reports of snow at Jindabyne, Cooma, Bombala, and even near Canberra. There's a weather warning for Sydney coastal areas with powerful surf conditions making rock fishing, swimming and surfing hazardous. Chief Meteorologist Tom Saunders from Sky News Weather is on the line. G'day, Tom.
Luke, good morning.
Nice to talk to you, mate. I just wonder if we're not, because there's lots of people talking weather today, if we're not, you know, it's got a bit cold, a bit quick, so everyone's going, oh, wow, this is incredible. Is it as bad as what some people think it is, or this is just winter, second day of winter? We've got to harden up a bit.
It's just winter, but even for winter, it is pretty cold. Like, the Sydney Sticks, coldest in 5 years for June. Only for June, though, we've had colder temperatures in July and August. Canberra, minus 7 this morning, that was their coldest June minimum in 15 years. So it is rare this early in winter to have temperatures quite so cold. But last August, Canberra had a temperature below minus 7. So in many ways, it is just winter. And surprisingly, we're not actually expecting an exceptionally cold winter.
What about Brisbane, mate? Because it's been pretty cold there this morning as well. Not as cold as minus 7, I have to say.
Yeah, Brisbane, 9 degrees in the city, but the western suburbs down at around Ipswich, they dipped to 2.6. And this cold weather over the next few nights will continue. We're going to have widespread severe frost right across eastern Australia. Western suburbs of Brisbane will be dropping down to around 2 or 3 degrees up until the weekend. Western parts of Sydney, Campbelltown, Camden, Richmond getting close to freezing as well. So some frosty nights to come.
Have we got a good snow season in prospect, or can't we tell yet?
you can never tell. Even, I mean, in 2 weeks' time, it could be raining across the Alps. It's certainly a good start. It's the best start in 3 weeks because there's actually snow on the ground. Normally, for the first weekend of the ski season, there's grass on the ground. So at least we've got something. But unfortunately, because we've got this strong El Nino that's developing through the Pacific Ocean, that typically means winter is warmer and drier than normal. So for Brisbane and Sydney as well, we're actually expecting, on average, at the end of this winter, when we look back at all the figures, generally we're expecting warmer than normal temperatures.
Beauty. Good on you, Tom. Good to talk, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you. 131873, the number, at 13 to 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
At North Sydney, we still have some solid traffic on the freeway, making its way down to the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Harbour Tunnel looking okay. Surrey Hills lights are flashing amber. Albion Street and Flinders Street. Also St Clair, Mamre Road and Banks Drive. And again, Hoxton Park, Cowpaster Road and Greenway Drive. Now, Kosciuszko National Park and surrounding areas. Snow and ice on the roads. Four-wheel drives can use most roads. Other vehicles must use change. And the M1 Pacific Motorway out of Sydney. No problems up towards the Newcastle area. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Looking for a home loan approved in one day? Real Home Loans. One real low rate, one day approval. Visit realhomeloans.com.au today. Conditions apply.
9 to 10, 131873 is the number. Give us a call. G'day, Brian.
G'day, Luke. How you doing?
I'm all right, Brian. Whereabouts are you and what's it like there?
Well, for all the people down your way who are freezing at the moment,
yes,
I'm in Townsville and it's 26 degrees and it's beautiful.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Come on up. It's lovely.
Hang on. So you're effectively just ringing to gloat.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, mate, there's nothing wrong with that.
I've lived in Hobart and I've lived in Toowoomba, so I've
what?
Come up here to defrost.
What? So how did you... Did you go to Townsville to retire or work or...
No, this is where I was born. I went down to Tasmania when I was 20, 21. I worked on the Tasman Bridge, rebuilding it.
Okay, wow.
After the boat hit it. I remember standing on the bridge, a couple hundred feet above the water, looking across to Mount Wellington, covered in snow, and the winds are coming up off the South Pole. And they're going around, they want someone to look for Peggy. You know, they go and clean the sheds and all that.
Yeah.
Everyone put their hand up because it's all heated.
All right, mate, look, you've tipped us off to Townsville today, 26 degrees and beautiful. If we had the chance, I'm sure we'd race up there. And we'd all come and see you, Brian. Thank you for your call, mate. Nice to hear from you. 131873. It's 7 to 10. Look, I have to tell you breaking news out of Queensland that we've got a tabling of the Greyhound report, the Palaszczuk government Greyhound racing report. And she, the Premier, has, according to our 4BC state political reporter Nick Wiggins, she says the Greyhound report is damning. The industry must clean up its act. Racing Queensland's Darren Condon asked to show cause why he should keep his job. He's been stood down until he responds. And all of Racing Queensland's boards have been abolished. The Premier says today we are starting with a clean state. Now, this was handed down or tabled in Parliament, I'm told, this morning. A group that rehomes unwanted greyhounds says tighter regulations in the racing industry will do little to prevent dogs being killed unnecessarily and wants the sport banned. The Premier will respond, obviously, through the course of the day. There are 15 recommendations there. But, in fact, that Darren Condon fella, the fella from Racing Queensland, he's got a problem, hasn't he? Got to show cause why he shouldn't be stood down. We'll see what happens with that. There'll obviously be more to come from our reporter, Nick Wiggins, up there. And the moment we hear further, we'll certainly let you know. Sanity Sale is on now. Visit Sanity for three albums for Wait For It, $50. There's So Fresh, Hits of Autumn, Ed Sheeran's Multiply, Josh Groban's Stages. Have you heard that? That is a great set of songs, I've got to tell you, the Josh Groban album. Or how about Pitch Perfect 2 soundtrack, Megan Trainor's Title, and Sam Smith in The Lonely Hour. There's also Lee Kernaghan's Spirit of the Anzacs Outstanding, Furious 7 soundtrack, and Bette Midler, It's the Girls. Choose any three for $50, save up to 24% per three. With heaps more to choose from in your local Sanity store and online at sanity.com.au. Sanity, proud sponsor of the Ray Hadley Morning Show and supplier of the Ray Hadley Country Music Collection, Volume 3, available now, supporting Professor Dominic Rowe's research into motor neurone disease. Sanity, great service and great value. 131873 is the number, 2gb.com. G'day, Luke. Record low temperatures. Where are all the global warming experts? Are they gone to ground? More like they're sitting by the fire at home. Yeah, it happens all the time. Even today, there's a report. You know, this is the coldest morning in 5 years. 5 years, that's nothing, given the age of the planet. But you're right, Alvin. They do tend to go in hiding, don't they? Hear what you're saying about the weather, Luke. Must have got to 16 this morning, had to put jeans on to go to work instead of shorts. That's Ken also listening in Townsville. So a 16-degree start to the day, and obviously pretty nice now. In Kellyville, Rodney says, woke up this morning, ice on my car's windscreen, water freezes at zero. Love Ray's show. Good on you, Rodney. Nice to know you're listening. Appreciate that very much indeed. 131873 is the number, 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon if you'd like to join us. From the Daily Advertiser today in Wagga, the owner of a family pet wrongly euthanized at the Wagga Pound has accused council of lying to her by saying the dog had run away. You know what? I remember working in Melbourne and there was an issue with one rescue place in particular and the euthanizing of dogs and the numbers that they were in fact putting down. I don't know. I hope we have in government and local council got control of numbers and understand what an acceptable rate is, but you do hear these errors occurring. Obviously, this can't be undone, and you just want a bit of honesty, don't you? Now, I wouldn't dare suggest at this point that the Wagga Pound has told fibs, but let's go on with this story from the Daily Advertiser. In reality, boxer Staffy Cross Cindy had been accidentally put down by council staff days earlier. Fighting back tears, Mount Austin single mum Skye Paproth said she would pursue legal action against council for the heartbreaking mistake. Horrible story there from the Daily Advertiser in Wagga today. Almost 10 o'clock. News is next.
You're listening to Luke Grant, filling in for Ray Hadley, right across Australia.
And welcome back for hour two of Ray's show on this Tuesday morning, the second day of winter. Hope you're well and happy. We're here until midday today on 2GB in Sydney, 4BC in Brisbane and 2CC in Canberra. On that number, 131873, emails 2GB.com, 4BC.com.au. I mentioned in the first hour we have found Dr. Jamal Reefy. I'll speak to him soon following that extraordinary front page story in the Telegraph today where Dr. Reefy and one or two others suggest that the money raised from these halal certifiers might be, in part at least, used to de-radicalise, or at least used in the fight to de-radicalise radicalised youth. And look, I think on balance, that's not a silly proposition. It's at least something we should talk about. But the thing that really got my attention today as I was reading the story in the telly was the fact that many of these halal certifiers, or at least a couple that they name in the story, are registered charities. I'll be just very keen to know what, in fact, what role they play, what charitable role they play in the community to justify all the tax exemptions and the like. I'll speak to Dr. Reefy, as I mentioned, in just a moment or two. Now, this will be of interest to listeners in Sydney. Telstra has apologised after outages left thousands of customers in New South Wales unable to make or receive mobile phone calls this morning. The technical problems also shut down the Southern Highlands train line between Campbelltown and Mossvale and affected internet connections. Early this morning, Telstra told customers via social media they were having issues with the ADSL network in New South Wales. People trying to make calls instead heard a message saying lines into the area were congested. Services were restored just after 6 a.m. The problems are being blamed on maintenance repairs that took longer than expected. Don't you hate that? Queensland police are investigating a suspicious fire which has destroyed four businesses on Brisbane's south side. The businesses were well alight when authorities arrived at an industrial building on Evans Road at Salisbury at about 1:30 this morning. More than 40 firefighters fought to contain the blaze. It's believed a stolen car was set alight at the back of the building. The fire spread to a skip bin, with the building then catching on fire. The premises were all unoccupied at the time and no one was injured. Up to 30 workers have been affected by the fire. One worker told Channel 9 she can't understand how the people who did this didn't think about the workers. Everyone now out of a job. Good point. 131873, the number. G'day, Anna.
Good morning, Luke.
How are you travelling?
Well, thanks. I'd just like to say, you know, I admire Tony Abbott's stand with regard to the same-sex marriage debate. I have to say, you know, there's nothing... To me, it undermines the relationship of a man and a woman and the importance of it for the, you know, the good of society. I mean, they're the only union that can consummate and through marriage and bear a child. And, you know, that child grows up in the love of that creation of that marriage union.
Anna, do you think this will happen? Do you actually, are you of the view that there will be a time shortly in this country where we'll have same-sex unions permitted under law?
Well, I think if the majority, and I don't believe in this 70% that are for it, if they start to really speak up about their family values, I think I don't see it getting through.
I can't help but think that the political numbers are such now that even if a vote was held now, it would basically get through. But I'm torn between the notion of it being an issue for politicians or an issue for individuals. In other words, having a referendum, the Australian people go to the polls and we have our vote, we have our say. It's an important moral issue for lots of people. And I know there's extra cost if it was linked to an election that might make it more affordable. But and I discovered this when I spoke to a few listeners filling in for Ray on Saturday. The idea it's the property of the people rather than the politicians who aren't meant to, in the end, represent the people. But anyway, Anna, I appreciate your call. I guess we have different views on the issue. I have said before that there was a time where I was stridently opposed to it, but now I'm not of that view, and I think it will just happen. But I'm just not convinced it should be an issue for the parliament more than an issue for the people. But I think we've got what we've got, which is a parliamentary vote later in the year. 131873 is the number here, 2gb.com. Click on feedback. Now, an Islamic community leader is calling for funds raised from halal certification to be put back into fighting against the radicalisation of young Muslims. Dr. Jamal Rifi is a respected GP in Sydney South West and a prominent figure within the Islamic community. He says halal certifiers should provide financial assistance to ensure young people within the community aren't radicalised. This includes the children of terrorist Khalid Sharouf, who apparently want to come back to Australia with their mother after being taken to the Middle East to live amongst Islamic State. The Telegraph reports two of Australia's largest halal certifiers each collect hundreds of thousands of dollars from their operations. Halal certification is an issue that comes up frequently for Australian consumers. Certifiers charge business for audits to ensure products conform to Islamic food laws. This means no blood, no pork, no alcohol, no flesh from carnivorous animals. If the product is meat, then the animal must have been slaughtered with a single cut to the throat, and the name of Allah must be recited during the slaughter. Smaller companies can pay up to $3,000 to certify halal products, while meat companies pay both annual fees and, of course, audit costs. A certification isn't just limited to halal foods. To be fair, it also exists for kosher products for the Jewish community. Two largest kosher certification groups have told the Telegraph that the bulk of money raised through certification went to operating costs, but ethnic groups in the Jewish community are also listed as beneficiaries. There are reports some halal organisations don't want to fund de-radicalisation programs because of concerns it will wrongly link them with terrorism. But Dr. Rifi says it's money from the Muslim community and it should be invested to engage with frustrated youth in that community. The Supreme Islamic Council of Halal Meat in Australia, SICMA, I guess you'd call them, received more than $1.5 million from certification fees and halal audits last year, while the Australian Federation of Islamic Council collected more than $860,000 in 2012. Both are listed as charities, as are the two largest kosher organisations, allowing them to receive tax benefits. The Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commission register says revenue from the groups aids refugees, the Islamic community and youth, ethnic groups and natural disasters. A federal government inquiry that will investigate food certification is due to report by November. As I mentioned, Dr. Jamal Rifi is a GP, very well-respected leader of the Islamic community. I've spoken to him before on this program for Ray, and he's been into the studio to speak to Ray on one other occasion, and he's on the line. Doctor, good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you.
Tell me what you think should happen here. Just spell it out for listeners. We know that there is a process whereby products receive certification. They get to have a logo impressed on their product, and as a result, they pay a fee for that, and the money goes somewhere. I think I read there one or two areas where that money is alleged to go, but you think it could be used in the fight against the radicalisation of youth?
Definitely. I think in the last couple of months, there has been a lot of discussion about some programs that we can engage our young people with and trying to dissuade them from this hateful ideology that they are exposed to, especially in the through the cyberspace medium, internet, social media, and the rest. Unfortunately, some of our organizations missed on the funding from the Attorney General Department, and other organizations that didn't apply because they said they didn't want to do that type of program. Logic will say our community should benefit from the halal certifications money. And I think some of this money should be targeted toward those organizations who are conducting such programs.
Are those programs happening quickly enough? I guess I'm trying to reflect on comments that might be attributed to you, Jamal. I'm not sure. I'm just digging into my memory here, where you might have suggested once that the programs weren't being rolled out quickly enough or weren't happening quickly enough.
Absolutely, because the federal government announced in August of last year some large sums of money, and only last month, 34 organizations nationwide received 1.6 million, which is 50,000 per organization. And I felt the time lag between last August and only April of this year, that was a lag of time, and we needed more of this funding to be rolled out much sooner.
Yeah.
And still, there will be a lot more to be done.
How do we measure if these programs are any good anyway? I mean, do we have the capacity to see the sorts of people that are going in and what happens to them through the process and how they come out? How do we evaluate whether or not these programs work?
Look, to be honest, in my view, if you can save one young person from being ensnared by such a hateful ideology, I consider this as a success. Also, any interaction between our community members and law enforcement agency, it will improve the dialogue. And then if people will become aware of any change in behavior or someone becoming more hardline in the way they are thinking, that communication will help them actually to contact law enforcement agencies to inform them about it. That is one way. The other one is our young people have been targeted through the internet by this hateful ideology. So if we can organize a lot of community meetings where we can talk in specifically about the wrongfulness of these ideology and about the right way that we should, as a Muslims community, first of all, help to protect and play a role in the safety and security of Australia. And these young people, they probably have plenty of time on their hands, so we can engage them in sporting activities, or people who may need assistance in finding jobs, we can do that. There is a lot of things that can be done.
What do you say to people who don't understand why they have to have one of these certifications on their product? I mean, you hear them ring 2GB all the time, and they say things like, well, hang on, I just want my chocolate bar. I don't need it to be particularly blessed. I just want you know, a couple of kilos of beef. I don't need it to be killed in a certain way or blessed by someone. They've really got no choice, have they? It seems that every product, or basically every product available now, has some degree of religious certification. Might be kosher, might be halal. There is a degree of suspicion about the whole thing in the wider community, don't you think?
Well, no. I reckon this is actually a misconception right now. Not all meat, let's say, specifically for meat, is certified neither kosher nor halal or anything. It's only a tiny percentage of the meat that is slaughtered in Australia that will be certified, and the majority of it will be for export. So such certification assists us and assists our community and actually assists our society in its prosperity, and assist businesses on selling their product to a larger consumer in the Muslim world, Iran, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Gulf states. So it is something that we all benefit from, and we don't have to contribute because there is a large percentage of meat that is not certified in any shape or form, and people, they are more than welcome. It is part of us as a society where we have a choice, and we need to actually make an informed choice.
But if you want to buy a chocolate bar, I think you're snooker there, aren't you? There are some products that are certified, and you don't have the choice.
Well, look, let me tell you one thing. I know from my experience, if people are going to shop, let's say, in Bondi Junction for any meat, they will pay the cost of the meat much more expensively than they'll buy it from the Lakemba.
Yeah.
And the meat over there is not certified, still expensive. You buy it from Lakemba, there will be some certified meat and some non-certified meat. And we found that depending on the suburb and the consumers, the cost, it will be there. It is not all meat is certified. No, I don't agree with that.
Well, with the whole process of halal certification, there is, it would appear, a fee that goes back to the certifying body. I don't understand why there's not just one body. Maybe you can explain that. But when asked where that money goes by the Daily Telegraph in this report today, they were a little evasive. Is there something to hide? Where does all that money go?
Well, look, I don't. People who actually earn this money and receive this money, they are the one should explain where the money goes. But anything that improves transparency, accountability, and governance of these companies, we welcome it. I have no idea about how the money is being spent, and I can tell you probably there will be more in a position to explain about how much their income is, how they spend it, and the staff, and how they distribute this money.
Yeah. All right. As always, Doctor, good to talk to you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Luke.
All the best to you. Dr. Jamal Reefy, one thing that does flow from that, I reckon that there would be a number of listeners who would say, hang on, there might be choice in some cuts of meat, but in other areas of my weekly shop, I have no choice. The certification is there whether I like it or not. Now, whether that, and this is the material thing, does it add an extra buck to the cost of your Dairy Milk chocolate? Does it change the flavour? I don't know that it does either of those two things, but the whole point that you want to buy just a clean wrapper with no religious certification on it, it seems to be something you can't do anymore in this country. But I think the bigger issue for me is, and I think it's good that Dr. Reefy is encouraging these certification groups to put some money towards education programs for young and potentially disaffected youth in particularly one or two areas of our society. But quite frankly, how is it that these organizations get charitable status? To what extent do you and I fund relief from FBT, GST concessions and the like? And for those concessions, what do you and I get? Now, don't you think we're entitled to know that? And I just find it, well, not bizarre, but very disappointing when the Telegraph go and ask a couple of these organisations what they do with the money they raise in excess of $1 million, and they seem not to be forthcoming with an answer. I don't know if we'll get one today, but it would be nice to know, because for some reason they're able to conduct this certification business, which gets them a quid, at the same time they get tax benefits from you and me, yet we don't get to find out exactly, you know, where all that money's going from. I think we should. 131873 is the number, 2gb.com, 22 after 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
And the M4 moving nicely east and westbound at Surrey Hills. Lights are flashing amber. Albion Street and Flinders Street. Also Hoxton Park, Cowpaster Road and Greenway Drive. Now down at Wollongong, a smash on the Princess Highway at Rosemount Street and Kosciuszko National Park and surrounding areas, snow and ice on the roads. Now four-wheel drives can use most roads. Other vehicles are required to use change. And between Lithgow and Bathurst, roadworks on the Great Western Highway. And just looking at the M1 down towards Wollongong, it's okay. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Thinking about your morning cappuccino, long black? Then you must be thinking about 7-Eleven $1 coffee. Grab one today. $1 coffee at 7-Eleven. Good call.
Great to have your company for Ray, who's not well today. Hopefully he'll be back on the air with you tomorrow. Our number is 131873. Emails to 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon. Back to call as we go. G'day, Chris.
Hey, Luke. How are you?
Travelling well, Chris. Thanks for the call.
I was hoping that I'd catch you while you had the good doctor with you.
Yes.
Because he made a comment that it's only a very small percentage of halal meats that are halal certified.
Yeah, he did.
And I was going to try and ask him if he could tell me where I can buy non-halal meat, because it's the abattoirs that are certified, and they don't just kill X amount of cattle for halal and X amount for non-halal. It's all halal. And so I would really love, if he's still listening, just to indulge me and tell me where I can go and find non-halal meat.
Well, I thought Chrissy said Bondi Junction, but look, I want to be fair to Dr. Reefy, because he is, I think, an important part of this whole debate. At least he's got the courage to stick his head up and have a chat, whereas lots of others, as you and I both know, won't even get involved. But you put the question out there, Chris. We'll see what comes from it. I thought when he said it, which is why I made the point, I thought he was pretty firm in his belief that non-halal meat was widely available, but there are so many other products that are certified, and you've just got no option, have you? So leave it with us, Chris. We'll see what the morning flushes out. There'll be other things, I'm sure, people will want to say. 131873 is the number here. Dennis, g'day.
Luke, two quick questions.
Yeah, mate.
If the manufacturer or the producer has to pay to gain certification, that assists the Muslim people to know what is halal and what isn't. So why do we have to pay for it initially? And secondarily, why does the producer or the manufacturer have to pay an annual fee? Once you've got certification, you've got certification.
Very good point. Well, you know, the other part of that, well, the annual fee is part of, they go and audit to make sure that, in fact, the process that was in place when it was first approved and the certification was issued is still there. In other words, it's like a license fee, isn't it?
Some companies are paying tens of thousands of dollars a year for
this. You know what gets me, and Dennis, again, this is us as a community saying, all right, now, so you're a charity. Prove to us that you do a few decent things, and apparently they've ticked the boxes there, and as a result, we'll give you some help with GST and other taxes, and you know, we'll make life a little easier for you. But that whole question of, so if we've got to go back and make sure that the certification process exists each year and that things are the way they should be, do we keep an eye on the fact that charitable status is there and appropriate each year? Do we make sure that everything they do as a registered charity is in fact in the interests of, well, let's put it out there, the Australian taxpayer who bloody well subsidises these places?
Well, I got to tell you, I have a little bit of inside knowledge about it, and the fee that they charge is nothing like anywhere near related to the amount of trouble they go to maintain that people are certified.
All right. If you've got an email, drop me one, mate. It'd be nice to hear further on that. I appreciate your call very much indeed. 131873 is the number, 2gb.com. For our listeners in Mildura from the Sunraysia Daily, today we learn residents of a Baronga household woke on the weekend to find the remains of a dog in their garden. I think Baronga is across the Murray River from Mildura on the New South Wales side. I think that's right from memory. The golden retriever was shot in the abdomen by what police believe to be a rifle, a large firearm. It's believed the incident took place sometime between 8:45 a.m. and 9:15 a.m. on Saturday morning. The remains were found close to the dog's home in a neighbour's garden. Police believe the dog may have walked for some time before finally succumbing to its injuries. If you've got details, you can call the police 5027 7599 Crime Stoppers, 1-800-333-000. Why the hell would you shoot a dog? Why the hell would you shoot a dog? Oliver, g'day.
Yeah, good morning, Luke.
Morning.
Question. All the charities that are in Australia at the moment, like the Red Cross, Salvos,
yep.
They're audited every year, and I believe that those audit reports are available to the public.
Yep.
Why aren't the halal certification? I mean, why isn't this a a thing that all charities have to do.
Well, look, we've just got to be careful because we're confusing. I agree with you. What you've said, Oliver, is 100% correct, and we've been... I got here a little later than Ray would, just because of the way circumstances prevailed this morning. I wanted to spend more time looking at the charitable or charities and not-for-profit website to learn more. But it was, I think, specifically the Daily Telegraph asked the organisations a couple of questions. They weren't forthcoming with answers. But I want to spend some time later in the day actually going to these websites and just making sure that there is a good level of reporting, because I don't know necessarily for either of these organisations, Oliver, if you and I are subsidising another taxpayer, subsidising to the tune of $5 or $100 or $100,000, but whatever it is, there must be, mustn't there, mate, there must be some uniformity in both reporting and behaviour. They all must satisfy that meaning of charitable organisation or not for profit, not once but every bloody day. And secondly, they've got to properly earn the benefits they get. So we'll have a look at that. But they said no to the Telegraph, it would appear. I'm just not so sure in my own mind yet, to be fair, that there isn't information available. So let me have a look, mate, and we'll come back to you, all right?
Yeah, it's a good conversation to be having, because we need to, you know, we need to make sure that this is kosher, as they say.
Smart man, well said. Yeah, too right, we should be having it. We shouldn't be scared to have these conversations, should we? Too often, please don't talk about that, but surely we can do this conversation justice by talking about it today, particularly today. 131-873, the number. Sean, g'day.
Yeah, g'day, Luke. How are you?
Travelling well. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good man.
Mate, I just wanted to let you know about the abattoir and the halal meat.
Yes.
I was recently working as a boner in the abattoirs there, and they didn't... Not all the meat was halal certified, but sort of only get the religious bloke in there once a week or twice a week just to do the halal stuff.
Yep.
So, just to reply to old mate.
Okay.
Paul earlier.
Okay, so it's not something that happens every day with every beast, is that what you're saying?
No, not for all okay. the working it was, no.
Hey, what was that job like as a boner?
Pretty hard on the arm.
Was it?
Yeah, bloody... I'll
tendonitis
plays up a bit.
Would have been. How did you get into it? Did you? You don't wake up one day and think, you know what, I'm going to be a boner. Did you?
I pretty much did, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was short of cooking council there for a while, so
okay.
I sort of gave that away to go and get into something a bit more physical, a bit more money.
All right, fair enough. Good on you, Sean. I suppose people wake up one day and think, I want to be a radio announcer, or why can't they wake up one day and say, I want to be a boner or a neurosurgeon or a... fill in the blank. 131-873, the number.
Macquarie National News.
Natalie Peters, good morning.
Good morning, Luke. All boards associated with the Queensland racing industry have been abolished in response to the greyhound live baiting scandal. Police believe a teenager killed when her car crashed down an embankment in Sydney's southwest wasn't found for more than 24 hours. Economists are predicting interest rates will remain on hold when the Reserve Bank Board makes its announcement this afternoon, and the Victorian government has offered to hold a state funeral for former Premier Joan Kerner. In sport, an extra 500 seats have been squeezed into ANZ Stadium for tonight's blockbuster between Sydney FC and Premier League champions Chelsea. We'll have more news and sport in 25 minutes.
Very good. Thank you so much, Natalie. We look forward to that. Stephen on the email says, g'day, Luke. If the certifiers want to quote-unquote clear the air, wouldn't it be good public relations for them to open up their books and list all of the charitable projects that they are funding in order to assuage the public general? Yeah, good point. Which government body actually audits these so-called charitable organisations? It's when, Stephen, you're a clever man, that is such a good point. When someone says, hey, just out of interest, where's the money go? Now, you can say, go and take a jump. But if you are a allegedly charitable organisation receiving assistance from the people, I think the smart thing to say is, hey, nothing to hide here. Come and have a look. And here are the books. Yeah, we spend money here. This place, there was a natural disaster. We gave them 50 grand. And what's wrong with doing that? I think that's a smart thing. Stephen, good note. Thank you, mate. 1-3-1-8-7-3. Yeah, Roy, what I actually said was, do you wake up one day wanting to be a boner? But thanks for your note. Hi, Denise.
Oh, hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call.
No
I actually
worries.
Wanted to make a comment about the withering same-sex marriage debate that
yes.
we haven't seemed to have as a nation,
yeah.
even though it's out there in the media. We already have marriage equality in this country. I find that a huge man of straw in this whole thing.
Tell me how we have that already.
Well, because we have all of the laws that relate to relationships. You'll notice that what used to be called marriages, the birth, death and marriages, is now called Relationships Australia. And all of the laws relating to relationships in Australia are equally applicable.
Hang on, is that right? I thought Relationships Australia was an organisation that conducted counselling and the like for...
Oh, yeah, well, it might be, but all I'm saying is...
And we still have the separate statutory body, birth, deaths and marriages, though, don't we, or something like it?
Yes, for certifications and things.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying to you is that it doesn't matter what area of the law you want to access. We have our anti-discrimination laws and our equal opportunity laws to absolutely ensure that if you are in a same-sex relationship, you are treated no differently to somebody who is married.
Hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. We have marriage equality in Australia.
There is, but what we don't have is the ability for people of the same sex who love each other to actually go forth and be married in a civil celebration or within a church, then have a marriage certificate. The other things might exist. But you know what? Whilst I think we probably would disagree on the argument, what we won't disagree on is a point you made about the substantive debate we haven't yet had, and I think that's got to happen. I'm kind of more inclined to think that a plebiscite of some sort might be better than allowing the politicians to run this, because we know what will happen straight out. I think it's one of those really important issues that individually we should have a vote that we own. How they keep the cost down, I suppose they link that to a forthcoming election, I'm not sure. But interesting debate, Denise. Not everyone's keen to have it, but I'm glad we got the chance to talk, and I do appreciate your call. 22-11. And it's great to have your company here. It's 18-11. Ray unwell today. Hopefully he'll be back with us tomorrow. Still waiting on some figures. That was radio ratings day today. And I know Ray normally goes through the numbers in some detail, but I just don't have the breakdowns I need to be able to be confident in giving you everyone's individual score. And I want to represent everyone accurately in the best way I possibly can. Alan's number one had a good survey here and in Brisbane went up. Same with Ray, still number one, and went up in Brisbane as well. Smithy's numbers from, and I haven't seen the official breakdown, he's on from 12 to 3, and the book actually does 12 to 4, so we have to kind of sort out Chris's numbers and Ben's numbers, but from what I saw briefly, both very impressive results, as you would expect. Mr. Price at night, Stephen did very well as well. Ross did well. Weekend's good. So 2GB continues to be the number one station. And I congratulate my friends and colleagues who work here, both in front of the microphone and on the other side. I suppose it's on the other side. 131873 is the number. Ahmed, g'day.
How you going, Luke?
Travelling well.
That's good, mate. Doing a good job for A, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, on the halal certification, Luke.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to use McDonald's as an example, okay?
McDonald's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay? And now, I'm from the St. George area.
Okay.
If I go to Rockdale McDonald's and I get a Big Mac from there,
yeah,
and I eat it, and then I go down the road to St. Peter's, where it's not halal, and I get a Big Mac, it's exactly the same, Luke. There's absolutely no difference, mate. See, I don't mind. I eat anything. Give me a 4 and 20 and I'm going to eat it. You know what I mean? Doesn't
yep.
bother me.
Are they certified, the 4 and 20s?
Doesn't matter, mate.
Doesn't matter.
Nah. It's too good.
What matters to you are the ingredients, right?
That's it. As long as it tastes good, Luke.
Yeah, okay.
That's it. Mate, my opinion on it is just that the certification, all it is just a signature from a sheikh, Luke.
Right.
Okay. So if McDonald's forward this form to the sheikh, mate, and they offer him good money, he's signing it no matter what. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's not going to stop him. I reckon it's just in for the money. Because why? McDonald's, why out of, let's just say, 100 stores in St. George area, they're going to take two truckloads, for example, for two restaurants that are only halal. It sounds ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Look, I get you. And you make a good point. I think the point basically is if it tastes good, it's a good thing to have. Mate, I'll leave it there because I'm running out of time. We've spoken much about this issue, and I did want to move on. So I'll take one more. Miriam, hi.
Hello?
Hello, Mariam, is it?
Yes, hello.
I'm sorry, I mispronounced your name. I'm well, thank you.
That's good. Back onto the halal issue, just a couple of points.
Yeah.
They need to be transparent with everything as to where the money goes. In regards to the chocolate being halal certified, I don't think that's necessary. It's basically, to me and to a lot of Muslims, it means that there's no animal fat or alcohol in the product. And I think that's why they stamp it halal.
There's also the way that the beast is slaughtered that comes into it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the meat, yeah. It's got to be slaughtered a certain way. So the meat has to be blessed.
So if I see a chocolate bar, and every chocolate bar, it seems, has got the logo on it, I can assume there's no animal fat, no alcohol, can I?
And there's no alcohol, and I think that's what it means. It obviously doesn't need to be there because we can all read the ingredients.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they need to have it on the chocolate bars and whatnot.
Okay, well, look, the debate started with, you know, where the money goes, and just so that we get the debate to where it started, and perhaps we'll leave it there and move on because there is lots of other things to talk about. It does seem often to be the issue du jour. If we're helping these organisations run as charities, then I think you are, and I am, entitled to know where the money is spent that makes it a charitable organisation, and in fact, should or should it not get the tax subsidies that are available to it. Apart from that, there is a bigger issue, which is, you should, and I should, and every, assuming you're Christian, and every Muslim, Jewish person, whatever it might be able to buy something surely without religious insignia. Shouldn't we be able to do that in a place that's meant to be free and open like ours? I would have thought that's just par for the course. It just seems in lots of areas there's not the wide amount of choice that there should be. But let's move on. There are other things to talk about. I did want to address this to listeners in Brisbane on 4BC. Brisbane City Council, I'm told, will undertake a one-year trial of a dedicated cycling lane on Annerley Road at Woolloongabba during the morning and afternoon peak on weekdays. What do you think of this? Lord Mayor Graham Quirk says it follows recommendations from the Key Parking Task Force. He said the trial is about providing a safe opportunity for cyclists to get around the city. But for drivers, it'll mean a loss of car parks. Hey, this is going to be a vote winner. Well done. Taxi bays, loading zones on both sides of the roads during these times. Genius. Councillor Quirk has stressed the trial will be monitored closely. Yeah, I wonder how long into the trial this will actually, you know, like, perhaps not a good idea. But there you are, Brisbane City Council. They're trialling peak hour cycling lanes on that busy Annerley Road at Woolloongabba. We'll see what flows from that. We'll keep across that issue, obviously, Ray will as well. 131873 is the number. It's 12 to 11.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 Used Cars.
Hoxton Park lights are flashing amber. Cowpaster Road and Greenway Drive. Now Surrey Hills, they're flashing also. Albion Street and Flinders Street. Now the M1, the Pacific Motorway breakdown. Right beside Lane 1 southbound, just past the Mount Wise Way Station. Between Lithgow and Bathurst, the roadworks on the Great Western Highway. 40k speed limit in some areas, so just be aware of that. And Kosciuszko National Park and surrounding areas. Snow and ice on the roads. Four-wheel drives can use most roads. Other vehicles are required to use change. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Looking for a home loan approved in one day? Real Home Loans. One real low rate, one day approval. Visit realhomeloans.com.au today. Conditions apply.
8 to 11, 131873. Ray's Crook today. Hopefully be back with you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Now we're here today out of Dubbo thanks to the Daily Liberal. A pea plater with a cocktail of drugs in his system who drove on a street near young children in Dubbo has been ordered off the road for 12 months, put on a good behaviour bond. This Keith Anthony Hartnett, 30, was seen to drive in a negligent manner in the vicinity of schools in Dubbo's West and with passengers on board. He pleaded guilty to driving while under the influence of alcohol or any other drug, and a test showed the presence of methadone, methamphetamine, known as ice amphetamine, and constituents of cannabis. Wow. Maximum penalty for the offence is 9 months in jail or a $2,200 fine or both, as well as a year off the road. The magistrate, Andrew Eckhold, convicted Hartnett, sentenced him to serve a 12-month good behaviour bond and disqualified him for 12 months, declining to reduce the period to the minimum of 6 months. The defence had said the offence could be dealt with by way of fine, but the magistrate did not accept the submission. Good on the magistrate. I mean, the fact here is that people say, oh, you know, I'm off my head on methamphetamine, so I'm doing 140 in a 40 zone, and it's because I'm off my head on methamphetamine. So, you know, can we do a deal and get the penalty halved or quartered? And as is the case, at some point in that clown's life, you are so in possession of your senses as to know that, you know, when you walk, you put your right foot, then your left foot, then your right foot and your left foot. When you're thirsty, you go to a tap, you turn it on, you get a drink. So you're able to make those very sensible decisions. You're also able to make those stupid decisions, which is, I'm now going to get myself tanked on methamphetamine and go driving. So at some point, that realised, well, that person was of sound mind to make that call. Tough luck. No impaired responsibility. You were at one point quite in control of things. You made a bad choice. Deal with it. Gosh, we are soft so often, aren't we, on these things? But good job there all the same. 131873 is the number. Coming up to 5 to 11. Almost time for the news at 11 o'clock. And Ray hopefully back in the chair tomorrow. A little bit crook today. You would have heard him yesterday sounding a bit hoarse in the throat. Hopefully back on deck tomorrow. Now, a series of severe storms that wreaked havoc along Australia's east coast in April and May has left a $1.55 billion damage bill. The Insurance Council of Australia says most of the claims relate to the widespread storms that struck Sydney, the Central Coast, Hunter and Illawarra regions in New South Wales in April. So far, 119,500 claims have been lodged in relation to $801 million worth of damage. Another 14,000 claims relate to Anzac Day hailstorms in Sydney, where losses are estimated to have been $389.8 million. Storms that hit southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales late April, early May also caused $360 million in damage, and there are about 27,800 claims received. The ICA says that more than $3.45 billion worth of claims have been handled by insurers for catastrophes, including Cyclone Marcia, the Brisbane hailstorms, and the South Australian bushfires since November 2014. All right, news coming up. Our number here, 131873. You can get to us via the email, 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au. Luke Grant in the chair for Ray Hadley on Tuesday.
You're listening to Luke Grant filling in for Ray Hadley right across Australia.
And we're back for the final hour of the show today for Ray, who's unwell, and hopefully we'll be back at work for you in the morning after 9 o'clock, 131873, the open line number, 2gb.com. Click on feedback if you want to drop us an email, or you can go to 4bc.com.au and do the same thing there. Now, I'm told by police in New South Wales especially that they're appealing for public assistance to locate a woman missing on the Central Coast, Diane Gardner, a 58-year-old, last seen at the Bay Village in Baddow Bay about 11 o'clock yesterday at a shopping centre. Police were alerted when family members could not locate or could not contact her. Officers from Tugra Lakes Local Area Command have concerns for her welfare, and they are appealing for public assistance. She's Caucasian of appearance, about 170 centimetres tall, brown and red shoulder-length hair with a solid build, last seen wearing a black T-shirt under a grey jumper and black shorts in this weather. Anyone who's seen Diane or may know of her whereabouts, you are urged to contact investigators at Wyong Police Station. There's also a number at Crime Stoppers, which is simply 1-800-333-000. 1-800-333-000 is that number. The president of an organisation opposed to same-sex marriage says his medical centre has been attacked by vandals. Now, this is Dr. David Van Gend. He's president of the Australian Marriage Forum. He says he returned from an interstate visit yesterday to find his medical centre at Toowoomba vandalised. Now, listeners to Ray's program through 4GR might be familiar with the centre. The building was vandalised with the word bigot, the anarchy symbol, and his surname. The doctor says opponents of gay marriage have regularly been the targets of vile behaviour. He says he's reported the vandalism to police. He says this sort of abuse is experienced by anybody who stands against the gay marriage juggernaut, but usually it's from trolls online, not vandals on the wall of a medical centre. The Australian Marriage Forum has been running a campaign against same-sex marriage, saying it would abolish the birthright of children to have a mother and a father. The vandalism, of course, comes as Labor yesterday introduced its bill to legalise same-sex marriage. Opinions are divided within the community on the changes, but surely this kind of behaviour, when property is being damaged because one person has a strongly held view, is not on. You bet it is not on. Should be able to do better than that, don't you think? A pedestrian has died after being hit by a car in Sydney southwest last night. This is around 9:40. A 60-year-old man was allegedly hit by a Nissan Pulsar while crossing Prairie Vale Road at Bosley Park. It's believed he was walking home from Club Marconi when he went to cross the road and was hit. He suffered critical head injuries, taken to Liverpool Hospital, but passed away early this morning. The driver of the Nissan, a 65-year-old woman, was also taken to hospital for mandatory blood and urine testing. It's believed the man was wearing dark clothing and was in a poorly lit area when he was hit. Police are urging any witnesses to again call Crime Stoppers. That number is 1-800-333-000. 1-800-333-000 is the number there. You know, it seems Queensland diners can't get enough of food challenges. Have you noticed these before? Local eateries recognising that supersized meals are a great way to entice diners. And this comes back to this whole argument of portion control. Now, I was referred to someone who knows about food and nutrition. I'm going to put it out there, a dietitian, who said my biggest problem was, wait for it, portion. I said, how the hell do you know about that? Anyway, we had a conversation and she did know about it. This is already something that happens a lot in places in New South Wales. Now, according to the Courier Mail, it's taking off in Queensland from a, what about this, 4.2-kilo burger. What? That's half a cow, isn't it? How big's a cow? Oh, hundreds of kilos. Oh, you're not going to eat the head, but still a 4.2-kilo burger is a big burger, isn't it? Chicken wings so hot, you have to sign a waiver. Foodies across the state are taking up the challenge to consume record amounts of food. Have you done any of this weird food stuff? The challenges are said to attract a wide range of people, particularly blokes who think that they can easily tackle supersized meals before they realise how hard it is to eat such large volumes of food. At Zipickle in Burleigh Heads on the Gold Coast, challengers have an hour to eat the pickle burger, which is made up of nearly 3 kilos of meat patties, 16 slices of cheese, 32 rashers of bacon. 32. Sounds so tempting, doesn't it? I could probably get to 30. If they manage to do it, the burger's half price. It's normally $120, and they get their name on the restaurant's wall. Another favourite is the colossal burger at Longboard's laid-back eatery and bar at Surfers Paradise. You've got a 9,000 kilojoule challenge here, containing a 900-gram patty of Wagyu beef, 200 grams of pork, 8 rashers of bacon, 8 onion rings, 6 slices of cheese, sauces, salad, and a giant brioche bun. Recommended daily intake is about 8,700 kilojoules. You get to kill this with just one of these colossal burgers. I wonder if you've ever done this and lost. Actually, I went to a Mexican place the other day, one of those, must have been the DFO in Sydney, and they have this massive burrito. Too big. Can't do it. Maybe one day could have, but not now. I'd love to know if you've done one of these before. I really would. I don't know what encourages you to do it, whether or not you starve for a day or two and then give it a crack. Are you out somewhere with mates, have one or two or three or a million too many, and then think, hey, let's tackle that big burrito thing. Is that how it works? give us a call, 131873. Would be interesting to know, at least for me. On the email, Mark says, "G'day, Luke. I think they should double the penalty if drivers are under the influence of drugs, because if they weren't taking the stuff, they wouldn't have got there." It's a good point, Mark. I'm not a fan. I think it's just a cop-out to say, oh, poor bugger was impaired because he had too much to snort or whatever they do with the damn stuff. I'm with you, mate. Good point. Thank you very much for that. 2GB.com, 4BC.com.au, 12 past 11. Our number here, 131873. G'day, Bob, listening up there in Coffs Harbour.